Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the program. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review, and our focus today is on a couple of events that took place in Miami Beach back in June. In the space of 4 days, Miami Beach police officer Adam Tavis killed two unarmed men. Okay, let's introduce the panel who I'm still trying to assemble, but I do know that we have Lawrence McCoy Sr., whose son Lawrence was gunned down 4 days after the first incident. Lawrence, welcome to the show, and thank you for taking time out to talk to us today.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you for having me on the show.
And I also have author and crime writer Denny Griffin joining us from New York. Denny, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Hi, Simon. Pleasure to be with you again.
And I'm hoping to have Sama Shahada, the brother of Hussein Shahada, who was killed on June 10th. Sama, do we have you on the line?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yes, I'm here.
Okay, nice to talk to you again, Sama. You may have to speak up a little bit, though. Okay, we've got a lot of ground to cover today, and I think I want to start with the media. The media is fair and impartial, right? Well, that's not always the case. In fact, I'm going to kick the show off with a little story from some years ago, and I'd like my wife to tell us about her experience with a major media outlet. Jan.
Hi. It was about, I'd say, maybe 10 years ago. It was my ex-mother-in-law's father had been murdered several years before that, and the man that was convicted of killing him and another officer, as a matter of fact, they were both police officers, was in prison for life, and he was up for parole, and we were fighting to get him, to keep him in prison. And the Ted Koppel, the Nightline show, came to my house to do an interview with us, spent several hours with us, interviewing each one of us at my kitchen table, as a matter of fact, and it told us at the, you know, a certain date that it was going to be aired on TV. And once it was finally aired on TV, they had maybe 1 second of my interview, 1 second of my mother-in-law's interview, and 1 second of her sister's. The rest of it was the man that was in prison. It was his side and his family, and they just completely twisted around what we said in our defense and put it all in his defense and covered him more after promising us that they were and took up all of our time, and they did right opposite from what they said they were going to do.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that, Jen. I think the moral of this story is that even the mainstream media does have a bias. Let's talk about what happened on CNN last weekend. After 3 months, finally, they decided to talk about the Adam Tavis incidents, and I believe it was something like a four-minute segment, and I quite frankly was horrified when I saw it. It could have almost been produced by the Miami Beach PD's public relations office. I mean, it was incredibly slanted. Lawrence, I presume you saw the segment. What was your thoughts when it aired?
I believe it was extremely biased towards the opinion of the police officers. It did not shed light, nor did it tell the full story, actually any of the story of what actually happened in Miami that night. It was all slanted towards the police point of view.
Exactly. Sammer, you must have been in a state of shock.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I took off work through the interview, and I was with him for about a good 2 hours, and get only a couple of seconds of what I had said, and for the Miami Beach PD to get, you know, all the time that they needed to say what they said. And then, you know, all the facts weren't reported on my brother or on Mr. McCord. So, it was completely unfair. I mean, they said things like making split-second decisions, but you could tell from the video that there was no second decision that needed to be made. Didn't report about how the officer had working-hour shift, and he was the only one that shot. The other six officers made the correct second decision. Didn't report about how his violent history.
Sammy, you're kind of breaking up. Can you speak a little louder?
I'm sorry. What didn't you hear?
Well, that's better. Carry on.
I mean, it was just completely biased and just an unfair report. They didn't really get into what happened on the officer side that was wrong that night. They didn't say that he was working a 14-hour shift, that he had his own domestic issues, his violent past. They didn't say how six other officers made the correct decision, and this one guy who did have all these issues, currently still having issues, made the incorrect decision. I mean, and I think to get a full story, all of that should have been accounted.
I'm in total agreement. Denny, did you have an opportunity to view the CNN segment?
I didn't, but I've heard a lot about it, and I've read some comments about it. And from what I've heard today and what I've heard in the past, it's disappointing, I would say, but to me it's not surprising. I've seen other examples of their reporting, so I'm not totally shocked by it.
Right. And I do want to say to our listeners, if anyone has a question for us, our switchboard is open, and that is area code 646-378-1120. Also, our chat room is open, so if you prefer, you can go in there and ask your questions. Do you know if anyone or have any of you tried to contact CNN and get an explanation of what happened?
I have. I sent out an email, and I know Ms. Becker did as well, and I never got a response. I just sent out an email asking why was it so biased, and how come I didn't get any time, or Mr. McCord didn't get any time. I'm sure also took a lot of time out of his day to do this interview, and he's got about a second. And I mean, I understand that they may have a lot of stories to cover, but I mean, I would think that when you cover a story, you'd get the full story and not little bits and pieces.
I'm not sure if either of you are aware of the very latest development with Adam Tavis. Did any of you see the press release that Miami Beach put out yesterday?
Are you referring to the one where he was released?
Yes.
My understanding is that he was working in the property department of the police, and there was an incident that happened, and basically they released him from duty. One report said that he was terminated. Another report says that he's on administrative leave. Another report said that he was actually released from duty, but still being paid. So I'm hearing conflicting reports. I'm not exactly sure what is true.
I think either way it comes down, he did something else that was stupid and he messed up again. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. And it shows that he's not this, you know, this upstanding citizen that everybody wants to believe that their police officers are. Everybody has a need to believe that, you know, police officers are, every single one of them is, you know, very upstanding and very, very trustworthy. And that's just not the case. That's just not the world that we live in. They're humans just like we're humans, and you're going to have corrupt ones just like you have corrupt anything.
We do want the police. We do want to have the image that our police are looking out for the public. If we don't have an image, the only other thing you have to stand by is that they're against the public. And if that's the case, you know, you're going to have the image of either they're not looking out for us, and that there's going to be a war between the police and the public, or they have to be within our jurisdiction, the public jurisdiction, and uphold what we want. And that's what we strive for. We want to make sure we have the police officers doing what the public asks them to do. And they have to be held to a higher standard because they are carrying weapons, because they are representing the public. So they have to be held to a much higher standard than a normal person would be.
I am hoping to have John Contini join us. John, do we have you on the line?
Yeah, we sure do. Simon, thank you so much for doing this show, and I'm so happy to hear Sammer's voice and Mr. McCoy, Mac McCoy's voice in the background. I'm blessed to be a part of their lives. I'll tell you what, Simon, these two gentlemen, I've represented a lot of people in my 20-some-odd years of being a lawyer, and let me just say from the get-go that I've not met two more polite, respectful men of integrity than Mac McCoy and Sam Shahada, and I mean that sincerely. I'm blessed to know both men, and I can't believe the amount of temperance and integrity and patience that they're both showing, having lost their loved ones who were so dear to them in such a violent and inexplicably cruel, unjustifiable way.
Right. You missed the very beginning of the show. I started with the CNN segment that aired last week. Sammer and Lawrence were pretty appalled by it. I'd like to get your reaction.
Appalled is such a generous word, really. I was outraged at just the irresponsibility of their journalism. And that's not all of CNN. Let me tell you something. If we had CNN reporters from Atlanta or Virginia, people who are connected or care about those communities there, and as you know, CNN is everywhere, then the story would have been different, Simon, in my opinion. But we had a fella here in South Florida who camps out basically at the Miami Beach Police Department. He's local. He actually lives here. His name's John Zarella. He's the one who was the reporter, and he never met any member of the Shahada family. He never met any member of the McCoy family. All he did is camp his weight challenge butt over there at the Miami Beach PD. All he did was walk around with the officers, and 95% of that segment was pro-police, in my opinion. And he never bothered to look at Adam Taz, this same officer who's in trouble for the third time now. He never bothered to look and report the fact that that man had two domestic violence priors in his life before he was hired by Miami Beach Police Department. He didn't look to see the cocaine allegations by a female officer who testified that she observed Tavs doing cocaine as an officer. He didn't bother to report that they didn't test Adam Tavs for 6-7 months later. He didn't bother to report that Tavs' personnel file is replete with problems. Here's a guy, and the reason why I was late to your show, I did a little snooping here the last half hour. I found some more stuff out about this fella. I've got a senior officer who Tavs whispered in his ear, basically challenging that senior officer fella who might be in his late 50s to a fight. He was intimidating that officer, whispering in his ear, "I'd like to have 10 minutes with you." You know, he's basically a big fella. Looks, according to the law enforcement officers I've spoken with at Miami Beach PD, off the record, because they don't want to come forward with their names right now, but they've come to me, two of them, in the last 48 hours. He kind of reminds them of Lurch on the Addams Family, a big, huge fella, kind of intimidating looking. And he's only 34, but this guy is huge and apparently obviously very aggressive. But for him to lean over and get in the face of a man his father's age, an officer forever in that department, and whisper in his ear, "I'd like to have 10 minutes with you," and intimidate that fella, that's just another example of the kind of person we don't want sporting a gun on the streets of Miami Beach PD. And what you're saying about all the officers, and Mr. McCoy is being so deferential, and so is Sammer, saying that we'd like to believe that our officers are there to, you know, protect and to serve us. And that is true for quite a few officers out there, men of integrity, men of righteousness, frankly. But today, more and more and more, they're hiring these young thugs that have backgrounds that are unspeakable, really, when you think of applying to be a police officer. My family members, I won't say who, can't not get a teaching job right now because of an old historical misdemeanor. And yet they're going to give a guy a gun and a badge and call him a police officer when he's got two different domestic violence proceedings in his past. And when they're accused by a fellow officer of doing cocaine on, why wouldn't you test that same officer every week for the next 90 days, 6 months?
Sure.
Just to make sure.
This latest incident where he's been relieved of duty with pay, there's some rumors floating around that this may be drug-related. Have you heard anything?
Yes. In fact, my sources are media people who have been camped out over there, and according to these folks from Channel 7 and other networks, clearly it has something to do with his, quote, dependency problem. And when I got more specific and I said, are we talking about alcohol or cocaine or any, you know, I pressed, and it was basically dependency as to cocaine. And then those same media people were familiar with the former allegations by a female officer of his cocaine use. And this latest incident has nothing to do, according to the media folks I'm talking with, it has nothing to do with these two homicides, McCoy and Shahada. It has a new incident, a brand new incident, arising out of the property room. And by the way, what kind of moron would put an officer who's got allegations of past of cocaine use, who's just had two horrific killings, what kind of moron would put that officer in the property room? Do you know what's in the property room?
I was just about
to. For all your listeners out there, what's in the property room is more cocaine than the Cali cartel right now, which we've broken the backs of the Cali cartel pretty much thanks to Uribe, that very brave president of Colombia, who's been surviving the assassination attempts right and left. So we've broken the back of the Cali cartel, and yet the property room at the Miami Beach PD probably has more cocaine right now in it, as evidence in many cases of arrests and guns and you name it. All the evidence is there, and you're going to put this guy in charge of that?
Yeah, it does sound rather bizarre.
And they wonder, Simon, why there's something missing, or why there's a new incident. Now, I've had two other officers tell me in the last, well, that's why I was a little late to your show, that in their opinion, however, perhaps some cocaine was not missing. Perhaps it's a setup by, and of course we thought of this, Simon, I know you have, you're very smart. It could be a setup by the superiors at Miami Beach PD. Maybe he didn't take anything. Maybe this is their way of finally trying to set this guy up to make him the fall guy so that he can be the patsy like an Oswald and take all the blame for these killings, and they can distance themselves finally from this guy and walk away unscathed while he takes the hit for these two homicides. And that would be a lie from the pit of hell. That would be a problem because he is only symptomatic of the problem there. Where they're not getting a pass, these superiors.
Right. Denny,
yes.
You've been doing some reading on this case. As a crime reporter, what do you make of the whole story?
Well, I'm not familiar with Miami Beach PD other than what I've gotten into because of these two incidents, but I'm really shocked that apparently the 72 hours minimum reassignment time or recovery time, if you will, after a fatal shooting incident is in place, and that this individual, Mr. Tavis, was put back on the street with his badge and a gun, and under the circumstances of that first shooting. I mean, you know, an unarmed victim and so forth, that kind of boggles my mind. I can't quite come to grips with how the decision was made to give him his gun back and put him back on the street.
Mm.
And we just mentioned putting him in the property room with some of the problems he allegedly has. So that to me, I'm very unable to come to grips with it. I guess the best thing I can say, I'm really shocked.
Denny, I think I can help. I really am blessed to meet you, too, Denny. I've heard wonderful things about you, and I want to run something by you. I just also heard from another officer the 72-hour rule. Most departments would never follow that, even if they have that within their standard operating procedures, SOPs they're called. They have enough sense not to go with the letter of that, and they make sure it is at least a month or more, as Sam or Shahada has often said, just to have enough time go by to give the homicide victim's family at least a delusion of believing that a full and proper investigation was done, so that their family member isn't seemingly just an object swept under the rug. And so it's way too insulting to immediately put the officer back, even if he passes a psychological, because it's almost rubbing salt in the wound of the family of the victim to so quickly follow that SOP, that standard operating procedure. But getting to Tabs for a moment, his psychological, very, very interesting what I learned here in the last 24 hours. It was done at Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai Hospital happens to have the contract with Miami Beach Police Department for these medical psychologicals. What's interesting is the same officer who Tabs whispered in his ear what he'd like to do to him, you know, how he wanted 10 minutes with this guy. Tavs rescued some doctor at Mount Sinai who was about to be charged, and Tavs interfered with that arrest, became a messianic figure of sorts, a hero figure to the doctor, by obstructing the arrest being conducted by the older officer. And in the context, what happened thereafter is the doctor who was finally rescued from arrest ultimately made an internal affairs complaint against the older officer. And guess who his star witness was? Adam Tavs. Tavs then becomes a friend, if you will, to that doctor who he saved. I wondered, using all three parts of my brain, whether or not that doctor at Mount Sinai, where he works, frankly, which has the contract for the PBA, for the police right there at Miami Beach, for the psychologicals like Tavs had to undergo, I wondered just how quickly Tavs ran to that same doctor for his psychological. I wonder if that doc, certainly his crew, his same outfit, that same hospital, that same staff of doctors, conducted the psychological for Tavs. We know that. We know it wasn't another hospital. We know it was the same hospital. And that's how convenient. So there's a lot here. We're just scratching the surface. It's like I told the McCoy family and I told Shahada family, this is a marathon. It's a 26.2-mile race. We're probably in mile marker 3 or 4 right now. We're going to have to pace ourselves emotionally, because this is going to, well, in order to do it right, we're going to have to lift up all these little rocks and watch these snakes, you know, crawl underneath these rocks when we turn the lights on here. And little by little, we're going to get more and more illumination.
I understand that there is an ongoing or supposedly ongoing investigation into the two incidents. Sammy, you were stood like 2 feet from your brother when Tav shot him. Have you been contacted?
Not at all. They haven't contacted me at all. I don't believe the whole ongoing investigation thing at all. I just think they wanted the time pass by and figure what they need to do. But I wasn't. That's a good point. And I never even thought about that, Simon. Somebody doing ongoing investigation. I'm probably one of the best witnesses that they could be since I was shoulder to shoulder with my brother. And I've never been contacted, not once, about what happened that night.
That amazes me. Lawrence, I know that you weren't a witness to the events, you know, concerning the death of your son, but have you been contacted at all by the Miami Beach PD?
No, and I agree with Sammer. They should have contacted him because he's a witness, his direct witness right in front of him. And as for my family, no one's been contacted at all. And I don't believe there really is an ongoing investigation. I believe that they're just stalling for time. They're just maybe trying to let it die down, and with that way maybe it'll just die out of its own if no one pursues it. If, you know, it's just like anything else. If you don't make enough noise, if people don't pay attention, then they think that it'll pass and it'll be dropped out of people's mind and out of attention, and it'll just pass away. And that's what they're hoping that will happen. They wanted our things just to go away quickly. They wanted to just be no noise, no kind of controversy, no kind of anything, and they're hoping that it would just disappear.
Okay. What's unconscionable is what they did to Mr. McCoy. He flew down there to find out what happened to his son. He came down with his other son, Matthew, and he came down with the mother, the boy's mother, and they were lied to by several officers. They told the McCoy family right to this poor father's face that the son had pistol-whipped a cab driver, had carjacked the cab, had driven the wrong way across MacArthur Causeway, had a head-on collision with a woman, and came out shooting at the police. All right, they demonized his son, and not only in the newspapers, which is what they do, so that the public kind of moves to the next story and says, well, that guy deserved to die, and they don't get outraged, and they move on to the next article. But then they did it right to the father's face and to his brother Matthew's face and Gina's. And then we find out, when a nice officer finally came forward and then gave us a tip, and sure enough, it's been corroborated, we find out that his son was 400 yards away. We've since talked to the woman that he had that he supposedly had a head-on collision with. She doesn't recognize him as the fellow in the cab. She saw no gun. Here's a woman that was in the accident, supposedly with him, saw no gun. She hears no bullets firing, nothing, no gun firing, until about a minute later, far away. And sure enough, his son is found 400 yards away on Terminal Island, not with 3 bullets like the police had told the family, 3 or 4 shots. No, minimum 9, as many as 11 projectiles piercing his body. We know that. Entrance and exit wounds. We've inspected the body. All defensive wounds. And I'm sorry, Mr. McCoy, I have to get into this. 2 in the face, 2 in the back, 1 under the right arm. Up and down the forearms. These are defense wounds, meaning the young man was covering up and he was running away, supposedly, or he shot in the back. And here's the bottom line. Clearly, the police lied to this family's face when they flew many thousands of miles to get there to find out. Not only did they lie in the papers, but they lied to this family who was hurting and grieving. Now we find out, we talked to the male passenger in the woman's car. Same thing. He corroborates the woman. There's no gun he saw. There's no identification of McCoy. And then we find out Tavs is one of the shooters. There's 3 shooters, not one. And there's little by little we're finding out more and more of the truth. But should we be the ones that have to uncover this truth? When there's supposedly an internal affairs investigation, supposedly a Dade County State Attorney's Office investigation, supposedly a homicide investigation, and guess who's conducting the homicide investigation?
Well,
the
Miami
homicide
Beach.
Which is like putting, again, the Al-Qaeda in charge of telling you where Osama bin Laden is. How can they investigate themselves?
Right. I mean, quite frankly, what the hell is going on with this investigation? I mean,
investigation is going on, in my opinion, is our own.
Well, I'm not trying to disrupt your long-term goals here, so, you know, you don't have to share any secrets, but are you planning some sort of, you know, unlawful death suit action?
Oh,
or?
Yes, there's no secret there. We've been very, very honest and upfront about that. We intend to file a wrongful death suit on behalf of both families. In Florida, you have to, and this is almost comical in this case, you have to wait 6 months from the civil rights violations, from the wrongful death, before you're allowed to file on the Florida statutes. You have to give them a notice under 768. You must give the municipalities a notice so that they can ostensibly investigate in the merits and do the right thing. So they're supposed to be given these 6 months right here while we're talking. They're supposed to be doing all this good stuff so that they can then come to us and say, you know something, you don't need to sue us after all. We've uncovered this, that, and the other thing, and this is what we found out, and, you know, there is merit to what you gave us notice in writing back after the events, and we've taken this 6 months by statute that we're allowed by law, and we've done the right thing, and this is what we found out, and can we settle? Can we sit down? Can we sit down and talk? And that's what's supposed to happen. That's why the legislature created that statute. Well, do you really believe that's happening? I don't believe that's happening because of the lies and how they demonize these two families with lies that we know are lies from the pit of hell because we're uncovering the truth. And by the way, I'm not afraid to say this publicly. We've talked to the taxi driver. He doesn't remember any gun. Now we're told it might have been a tire iron. And Chief Noriega from Miami Beach PD comes up with a gun a week later and admits, well, we can't connect this gun to the McCoy shooting, to McCoy. They find it in the water, and it's like, it's comical. There are hundreds of guns. That's where they throw these guns over the bridge in the water, these dirtbag felons in Miami. That's what they do after they do their little felonies, they throw their guns off. And so there's quite a few guns down there. So about a week later, they fish some gun out of the canal, and they admit publicly, I mean, you've seen the newscasts, well, you know, Noriega says, you know, we can't connect this particular gun necessarily to Lawrence McCoy, semicolon, however, comma. The bottom line is it's pathetic how far they're reaching during statutory period when they're supposed to be investigating the merits of these shootings, how far they're going the other way in trying to demonize families. And
right. Even though the CNN segment was, you know, produced by the press department of the Miami Police PD, has it actually resulted in any interest from any other mainstream media outlets?
No, you'd like to think that this coverage on CNN caused other networks to then come forward. It could have and would have if it had been fair investigative reporting, true investigative reporting. If some of the things we're talking about today, which have been discovered to be truth, if any of those nuggets of truth had been reported, then other networks would have picked it up. But why would another network pick it up when you have 95% of that segment having police officers speaking about how they have to make split-second decisions? Hello? You know, you got a civilian with his arms in the air. You can see on video there's no furtive movement. What kind of split-second decision? There's six other officers right next to Tav. None of them shoot. The guy with the taser, he doesn't shoot. Only the guy that has cocaine allegations in his past, only with two domestic violence priors, only he shoots. And they don't report any of that stuff on CNN. If other networks had heard that, perhaps they'd be approaching us. it takes you, Simon Barrett, in a show like this with objectivity and neutrality, frankly, and with a open-mindedness to all the facts, it takes a show like this, hopefully, to get the word out.
Denny, do you have any questions for us?
I certainly do. I'm still hung up on this 72-hour thing, and I'm not familiar with Florida law or Miami Beach or the county. Lots of jurisdictions, an officer involved in a shooting, a fatal shooting, would be on leave or off the street, pending, in many jurisdictions, a coroner's inquest, and evidence would be presented and so forth. Obviously, that doesn't happen in Miami Beach. Am I correct, Mr. Contini, that there's no coroner system there, a coroner's inquest?
Right, exactly. This is a thug PBA. They have a strong union. If you picture the old days in America where unions were a lot of crooks and a lot of real, you know, longshoremen, you know, a lot of these the organized crime allegations where the unions are run by thugs. The police union bullied the city, apparently, enough to where the union's in charge. They're a bunch of thugs, frankly, and they've got the city capitulating to them and to where they cover their own. So it is us against them, as Sammer and Mr. McCoy talked about. God forbid it becomes the police against the public, that thin blue line they call themselves. It's really them. They see themselves as a distinct from protecting the public. They are a fiefdom that needs to protect itself, this union, powerful lobby. They have muscled the city, which has capitulated to them, and they've made it so that if one of their officers can pass a psychological within 72 hours, he's free to rock and roll again.
Oh, wow. The other thing I couldn't help but wonder, you mentioned about the six-month waiting period before you can file with a civil rights violation. I know there have been other cases where this wasn't homicide, but take the Rodney King case in California, for example. When he was acquitted by the jury, or when the officers were acquitted by the jury in Simi Valley, they ended up, the feds got involved on a civil rights violation. Is there any chance that
That's right.
The feds would be able to come in these cases and see if the civil rights of the victims were violated?
It's a great question, and the answer is yes, and the feds should come in, hopefully will come in, because in the case that you brought up, which is a great case, Rodney King, there was on video, just like in our case, video. People can see the injustice. They can see the crimes of, in that case, Stacy Coons and the other three officers. They could see what they saw, and they could see the Simi Valley all-white jury that acquitted those officers, and they could see that there was not real justice done. And so the feds were pressured. Not that they want to do the right thing, not that they're wonderful and they're going to come in there on their white horse, because it's because they had very little choice. The public was outraged enough. Enough people had seen the video. Enough people put pressure on the feds. So the feds then, capitulating to that pressure, did the right thing. And they're a different sovereign. It's not double jeopardy like a lot of people claim. Hey, those officers and their families were saying, wait a minute, this is double jeopardy. We were acquitted. No. That's by one sovereign, the state of California. That sovereign, that there's a different sovereign, United States of America, and there's different federal statutes, and so double jeopardy doesn't protect you from another sovereign coming in there with a slightly different elements of the crime. And they came in as feds and did the right thing. In this case, the same thing hopefully won't take that. It won't take as much as the Rodney King pressure. Hopefully enough, the feds will get involved before the expiration of this six-month statutory period. I make no bones about it. I've been on TV repeatedly, and we're all asking the feds repeatedly to get involved. We're coming to them saying, please, jump in the pool, because without your help, we're not going to get a fair and objective investigation.
Right. But the big difference, though, between this case and is the fact that people like Fox and CNN played that video over and over and over again, which just, you know, incensed the general public. The feds had no option, right? But in this case, no one's really creating much of a stink. And I hate to say it, but you got to apply pressure to get them to move.
I agree with you 100%. Now, there is some there's some movement in certain camps, whether it's the Rainbow Coalition, also Al Sharpton. You know, those folks are starting to look at this thing pretty seriously in the last week or so. And there's some real interest now. And now once they get involved, they could really beat that drum harder and help trumpet this thing, as you're trying very hard to do yourself, Simon, thank God you are. But we may need some more help, as you suggested, from other groups nationally with some national muscle, if you will, behind them, like a Sharpton's outfit, to just beat that drum and trumpet this thing and just make a lot of noise, as Mr. McCoy has said. We need to do that. I'm trying in my own way to do as much of that as I can, and yet some of it's falling off deaf ears, like with CNN. We've got to get some more folks looking at this videotape. I'm the one that released it to all the media. And they ran with it for about, what, a week, maybe? But this video is very clear. And this, you can see a homicide occur right on video, right before your very eyes. You can see this man blown off camera with his hands in the air. Why wouldn't that be played repeatedly until there's some justice? Now, the feds, we're going to have a show again on your show, God willing, in the next 30 days or a few weeks, and I might be able to report to you some good news in that regard. But I don't want to be premature about it, but there are some folks starting to listen to us.
That's good news. I mean, I'm appalled by this entire story. This is a story I don't want to cover because it shouldn't exist. Because none of this should have happened ever.
I agree with you. And they even said McCoy and Shahada both were felons and they had prior criminal history. Number one, that's a lie. But even pretend for a moment, both men had a criminal history of sorts. Rodney King had a rap sheet the length of my, I'm 6'3", the length of my legs. The guy had a zillion prior felonies in his life. He still got $3.8 million. Why? Because even if you're a guy with a bunch of felonies in your life, that doesn't give law enforcement the right to violate your civil rights and beat you repeatedly and do the things that they did to him. It doesn't give them the right to do that. So even if Shahada and McCoy each had a criminal history, which they did not, but even if they did, that doesn't give law enforcement the right to summarily execute them.
No, most certainly not. Samer, there's something badly wrong with the system. What do you think should happen to fix the system? I know you can't, there's nothing that anyone can do to bring your brother back, but there's got to be something we can do to make sure that this does not happen again.
I mean, obviously, I think somebody outside of the Miami Beach, this Miami department in and of itself needs to come in and really take a real honest look at how they run their system. Because, I mean, to allow somebody like him to be, he shouldn't really have been on the force to begin with. I mean, maybe if he wasn't on the force, maybe if they looked at his criminal background and his cocaine allegations, maybe my brother would be allowed. Because the other six officers didn't shoot. Maybe there would have been a seventh officer there that also had common sense and would never shot. And in my personal opinion, I mean, a police officer should have go through a very thorough. For instance, I work for a government contract, and I have a clearance. And for me to get that, I have a top secret clearance. And for me to get that, the whoever issues them, the government, they had to come and talk to my family and talk to my neighbors and check my criminal background, ask me any questions, check my financial background, make sure that I'm not in no financial trouble and won't give up secrets. If I have to go through that sort of rigmarole to just work in a building, somebody who's walking around all day with a gun in their on their right hip should go through the exact same. At least if it's right in front of your face and you know that he has these, you know, violent criminal background and cocaine allegations. I mean, that's in front of your face. That's really no digging up. I mean, he did it in your department. I mean, the cocaine allegations was in your department. You know about that. He shouldn't have been on the force. And then after that, after my brother got killed, maybe if he wasn't back on the force 3 days later, maybe Mr. McCoy's son would have been alive. Yeah, maybe somebody else shot, but nobody else was there. Maybe Mr. Tarris was the first person that shot, and everybody else just followed suit. You know, I mean, you don't know what would have happened if the right thing would have been done to begin with. He was never on the force, or he was never allowed back to work. I mean, it was just a complete injustice. And then on top of that, they weren't reporting the truth. I mean, it shouldn't take my lawyer to get the tape and to get this video surveillance tape and show it. They were trying to cover it up. They tried their best to get it taken away. It shouldn't take my lawyer or Mr. McCoy to find out that, no, he never really had a gun. Maybe it was just an iron tire. Maybe they should have, came out and said that to begin with. There were so many stories to begin with my brother that, he had a gun, and then finally realized that, they can't prove that. Then another thing is, my brother got shot in South Beach at 4 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night. There were at least, I don't know if you've ever been in South Beach at 4 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night, but there was tons of people outside. You're trying to tell me that the only witness that you can get is somebody whose uncle works for the Miami Beach Police Department, and somebody also put in an application to the Miami Beach Police Department, and somebody who you treated very, when he was in the police department getting questioned, he got Einstein bagels and coffee. I didn't get that. I was never offered any Einstein bagels and coffee, neither were the girls that I was with. He was in there chummy with all the police department, with all the police. I see this. I saw this. I got locked in a room, as did the other girls. We weren't even allowed to go use the bathroom.
But
you
they
got
lied
to walk around freely.
Sam, they lied to you.
They lied to me for 5 hours, telling me that my brother was in critical condition, all the while he had been dead on the scene. There were tons of other witnesses there. And you're trying to tell me you couldn't find anybody else? I don't think so. I think the reason is he was the only one that would have collaborated or tried to even help this story out. And that's the only reason that he was the only. People were tugging at the girl that I was with saying, I saw what happened. They said, get the hell away. Don't talk to her. It was just a complete injustice that should have never happened.
Right. Well, Lawrence, I have a question for you. Have you been able to ascertain exactly who was there the night that your son was brutally murdered? I've heard different stories that, there were 3 officers, there were 6 officers, there might have been someone that was off duty. It just goes on and on and on. Do you have any idea?
The story keeps changing, and that's why we're really not sure about what really happened. The police would like to say that he was surrounded by police cars. He had run into another person head on, and so there was a lady who supposedly jumped out the car, started shooting at him. He shot back at her. They shot at the police. There were reports that there were more than 100 people on bridge that night, and the bridge, I don't know if it was closed off or not closed off at the time. And supposedly, if he had a gun, he would have been shooting back. He couldn't have thrown it in the water. If he had a gun trying to shoot back and escape, he would have been shot on the bridge. But he was not shot on the bridge. He wasn't even on the bridge when he was killed. they state that there were more than 100 people around, but then they said, well, we don't have really any witnesses that there was any shooting going on. We don't have anybody to corroborate that there was any kind of damage to the cars, any bullet holes anywhere, anything was shot or anything was shot at. You know, so the stories continually shift, it's changed. All I get fed is a bunch of lies from the police, and I'm really fed up about this. The only way I get true information is from Mr. Contini. He gives me the true information because his team is working hard to find the truth. They're working very hard to let me know what really happened that night. And I continue to ask why this had to happen, why did it have to come this way. I'm getting reports that he was nowhere near the bridge. He was at the bottom of the bridge, the terminal island, when he was killed. And I understand that Officer Taz may have run into him there. And what, you know, whatever happened transpired before, my son may have not been involved. This may have been at the bottom of the bridge. He had run into economic because of the economy. He had run into an economic letdown, and he had lost his job. And he may have been sleeping at the bottom of the bridge. And Officer Taz may have run up on him and just executed him, shot him in the face, blew his face off, his hand. He was trying to cover himself up and defend himself. As a matter of fact, he was trying to get away, and all the wounds are close-range wounds, as though he was, you know, executed like gangland. And I don't really understand exactly what happened. I really don't know, and the only way I know is what I'm being told by my lawyer and his team.
Yeah, we found out that there's a female that shot him down there with Tavs, and she was not even a real officer. She is a PSA, one of these service aides, basically a civilian. She's not a sworn police officer. She was dating another officer who's retired. She shot McCoy with that other officer's gun.
No way!
Yes.
You're kidding!
That other officer also, that retired officer, who's under a cloud of suspicion right now, that's another thing I've uncovered here in the last 24 hours, that other officer who's retired, who she's dating, they were down there feeding her cats, supposedly, down there on Terminal Island when this shooting occurred. She shoots McCoy with his gun, and with the older officer who's retired, with that retired officer's gun. And that a retired officer may have also fired. We're not sure about that. We do know Tavs also fired, and we know that Frank Celeste, another officer, was one of the shooters as well. But the interesting thing is everybody's getting a paycheck still except for this civilian woman, PSA, who, again, for her to be able to shoot with the other officer who's retired with his gun, he would have disciplinary problems to let his service revolver be used by someone else. And by the way, when he retired, he's under a cloud of suspicion. There were a lot of overtime theft going on by officers who were stealing time to get more money, if you will. And he was the sergeant of the group of them who were in trouble. And so when he retired, he's under a cloud of suspicion, and that investigation into the overtime thefts is still, quote, ongoing. So what they'll do is they'll call it investigation ongoing for years and deliberately string it out and not close it to deny access by Simon Barrett or Denny or John or any of us that want access to that, because that fella, his investigation into his alleged wrongdoing is still, quote, ongoing. Now, that we're finding things out every day, guys. And I don't know, it's too early yet, but we're getting this from, how am I getting this information? I'm getting it from a little trickling out here and there by other officers who I'm getting friendly with, who have come to me because of the media attention because we keep making noise. Little by little, we're getting a couple of guys that are growing a conscience, that are getting the courage little by little to meet with me and to tell me some things. And
wow.
we're going to have the Justice Department interested enough to smell the coffee and to jump in the pool, God willing, soon.
You know, Denny, I think you need to send some of your friends down there and clean the place
Denny,
up.
If Denny has friends, let me say, Denny, I kiss you. I don't know where you are. Where are you, Denny? Where are you?
Right now I'm in central New York.
Right,
well,
but he also hangs out in Vegas.
I'll get on a plane and go meet you, and if we can meet your friends. If any of your listeners out there have any powerful friends that know how to make some noise, we're getting the projectiles. We're getting the ammunition for what started out to be an empty firearm. We are now getting the projectiles. We're getting the ammunition that would allow people to sit down with the Justice Department and say, hey, look at this, and how about this, and how about that, look at this. We're getting enough now that they really should.
I'm not sure you'd want Denny's friends involved. Three of his five best friends are ex-mobsters.
Well, you know something? When Kennedy was assassinated, some of our government turned to mobsters to ferret out, you know, when they wanted Castro. And there were times when we've had to actually reach out to wise guys because they had influence, whether it was Sinatra or whether it was Kennedy. I don't care who your friends are. If they have the ear of the federal government enough to where this federal government can sit down and say, okay, what you got? What you got here? Let me see what you got. That's what we need, and we should have that, God willing, soon. And by the way, our whole attitude would change. If Tavs, through his lawyer, and I'm going to reach out to his lawyer soon, by the way, and I'm not going to say much more to you now, except that if he were to do the right thing right now, where he sat down with me through his lawyer and say, okay, listen, I can give you my department. I can give you, they knew this, they knew this, they knew this, they knew that. And I feel bad. And I feel actually terrible. And I do have a cocaine habit. And I do want help. And if he were to tell the truth, and if he were to say, I wish in retrospect I had gotten help a long time ago, and I do, I'm repentant, and I am remorseful, if our attitude toward him would change, all we want is the truth. And the truth would be he would have to admit that his department, yes, I've had a godfather, and they call that a godfather in the police department. When you have an older officer and you have political connections who cover you and help you get past all the other discipline that most people would be subjected to. And he obviously is protected. I've had some older officers there tell me he's got a godfather there of sorts. And that's how he's been able to escape as a 3-year officer. So if he would have come clean with us and then help us get the department to where we can get some changes made. For instance, policies would then change to where with his help and his lawyer's help and falling on their sword, they would apologize, admit that they screwed up, admit that he screwed up, help change the policy so from now on officers would have to undergo, as Sammer said, a different set of protocols before being hired, where they would have to be subjected to the old FBI examination when you're an FBI agent, what they have to go through, and what I had to go through when I wanted to be a federal prosecutor one time before. I used to be a prosecutor, where they talk to your neighbors, and they ask two people to name two more people that know you. Then they go to those two people, and they ask them to, and they find out about you, like Sammer had to go through to get his security clearance. An officer should have to go through more. Now, if the policies were to change with his help, of just officers have to undergo more training, they have to undergo more of a background check, and then when they do something wrong, there has to be real discipline. And if these 8 or 9 things were memorialized and we could all agree that these changes occurred as a result of these two killings, we would all feel differently. And if they're worried about money, if that's the reason why they're going out of their way to lie through their teeth so much, because they don't want some multi-million-dollar verdict, and that's it's all about money here with them, and them wanting to be so afraid of liability and paying a big nut one day, hey, the money can start to plummet. It can start to come down.
by a lot if they did the right thing by both of these families and quit lying to these families and hurting these families. They're adding more and more pain to these families exponentially by how they're demonizing their loved ones.
But, by the way, I'd also like to say this to our listeners. If there is anyone that witnessed either event, if you contact me, I will certainly put you in touch with John. I'm pretty certain John would be interested in talking with you. Is that a true statement?
Absolutely. And there were so many witnesses. Sam is right. It's so shocking. And Mr. McCoy is right. There are 100 people on the bridge. You telling me none of those people could help us? Of course they help us. The reason why they're not giving us the names of those people is because those people help us. And the reason why, and Sam is right, we talked to Carlia and Natasha, two beautiful women, by the way. They're so sweet. They were the fiancés to Samer and Hussein Shahada. They were there for the whole four days. They were walking behind the brothers, as women will often do. They'll talk in to themselves as the men will walk at a different, whether behind, in front, whatever. And they're just kind of, the girls will talk. And they didn't see the murder of Hussein Shahada, but they heard the bullets. They heard the three shots. They came running. Many people told those girls, we seen it. Oh, they killed him for no reason. There was a mantra of sorts from civilians telling the girls they killed him for no reason. That was what you heard. That's what they kept hearing. The police ran those people off. Sammer's right. Anybody who could help expose the truth of what happened was run off. Thank God for technology, which I don't really like. By the way, I'm one of these guys that is technophobic. I didn't really like. But the video here, technology has helped save us. But also Sammer's BlackBerry. It's no secret now that when you can hear the police cursing at him. Here he is grieving his brother's death. He's trying to touch his brother who's bleeding out of his mouth. He's praying. You can hear Sammer praying, Yarub, meaning, and he speaks English and he's been raised here. He's a citizen, and yet when he prays, Sammer prays in Arabic. And you can hear him praying, Yarub, Yarub, please save my brother. Please save, repeatedly. You hear 26 different minute-and-a-half recordings on Sammer's BlackBerry. He didn't press all the buttons to make that phone record. They had cuffed him. They had handcuffed him. It's impossible for him, while handcuffed, to do that. And yet, through some miracle, or call it providential sign that Sammer was praying for, about a week later, he discovers on his BlackBerry the entire event was recorded. As they're throwing him in the police car, cursing at him, get the F in the car, get the F in the car, and I'm not going to curse on your show, but they were saying, you
wouldn't be the first.
Well, then you can hear, Sam, Denny, listen to this. You can hear one officer say to another, did we get the wrong dude? Dude, they called him dude. Did we get the wrong dude, or was it the wrong dude? And then the other one says, we didn't find anything. I mean, there's no gun. There's no nothing. You can hear this screaming admission against interest. You can hear their conversation while you hear them saying, why'd you shoot my brother? We got this.
I'm appalled. I know this is, we've talked about this before, but the two young ladies, they weren't treated very nicely, and clearly they had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Well, yeah, their civil rights were violated, too. If you, Simon Barrett, or if you, Denny, took two women, put them in rooms and wouldn't let them leave, you'd be in jail right now for kidnapping. And maybe someday they would let you plead to a lesser-included offense called false imprisonment, another felony. But that's what your fate would be if you did what they did to those two women.
Do you know how long they actually kept them?
6-7 hours. And look at Sammer. Here's a brother who just lost his brother, and they handcuff him for what? Why did they handcuff Sammer Shahada on the street and put him in a room This is kidnapping, false imprisonment, assault and battery. There's a myriad of crimes they committed against Sammer for doing nothing.
Sammer, clearly you want some retribution. I mean, what happened to your brother is unconscionable, and what happened to you is unconscionable. I really do hope that you move forward with a civil action against them.
Oh, hell will freeze over before we do not. We are definitely doing that. And with McCoy, let me tell you about his son, too. They demonize Lawrence McCoy as some sort of dirtbag, felon, and all this stuff. His son, Lawrence McCoy's son, when you look at his, you read about him, I'm putting it out there. He only ate organic food. He was a sweet-spirited young man who helped disadvantaged children. When you look at how he went on missions trips to Kenya, to Cuba, with his faith, his church, he was so sweet-spirited and selfless in what he did for children. This is who they demonized. This is who they killed, number one. And like Mr. McCoy said, you wouldn't even do a dog that way 9 to 11 times. And how Michael Vick gets 2 years in prison for killing a real dog, and now this guy's getting a paycheck still?
I think that's what absolutely appalls me. I am glad that finally they have suspended him, but I'm not nearly so glad that they're still paying the idiot.
Exactly. And you know something? This could be their attempt to distance themselves and put him as the fall guy. And maybe they're going to try to create the cocaine history on this guy to say we just had one rogue guy. How did we know? Cocaine. He's obviously got a dependency problems, and the rest of our department is fine. Nothing wrong with us. And if that's what's going on, it's going to fail miserably. Just like we've exposed their other lies little by little, we're going to expose it all. And they'd be much smarter to come to me. They'd be much smarter to sit down with us, fall on their sword, admit to their mistakes, agree to change their policies. They would be much smarter, but that would be using all three parts of their brain,
Which is unlikely.
and Sammer Shah, I've never met, he'll tell you, his brother Hussein was a funny, happy-go-lucky, 29-year-old, both men were 29, but his brother owned his own little limousine company, was so proud to be an American during the Obama inauguration. He would drive congressmen around in his limousine, company car, and he was so happy and proud to be doing that, and he was just a fun 29-year-old self-employed businessman who lived with his mom, who has a dependency, a disability. The mother, Sammer's mom, was living with Hussein. Hussein would help take care of her, pay the bills, and work hard. What a good young man. How many young men would do that, at 29 years of age when they could be out scoring chicks or whatever? No, he did the right thing by his mother, who was disabled. This is the kind of young man they demonize after they execute.
I am beginning to buy into the argument that you're right, that this latest development may well be a way that Miami Beach PD can distance themselves.
I'm hoping that that's true. If that's true, Simon, I apologize for interrupting you, but if that's true, I'm hoping that that's what gets the attention of Adam Taft, where he and his lawyer then are willing to sit down with me and say, look, we don't appreciate being... Yeah, we screwed up. We did these things, and I do have a dependency problem, but I'm now being made the patsy, and I'm now being set up, and can I sit down with you, There's always the chance of that, something, and I'm one of these guys that I don't talk out of both corners of my mouth. I defend people. As a criminal defense lawyer, I defend people like Taft. That's what I do for a living, a lot of it. I do believe in civil rights, and people ought to be able to have the presumption of innocence. Where I'm different than Taft is he executed these men like Hussein Shahada and Lawrence McCoy. He didn't care about their civil rights at the time, their right to life and liberty.
he just decimated and eviscerated their civil rights. Where we're different than him is we champion his. He has a right to remain silent if he wants. He has a right to be secure against unreasonable searches and seizures, the Fourth Amendment. He has a right to compel witnesses on his own behalf, the Sixth Amendment. He has a right to confront witnesses against him, another Sixth Amendment provision. He has all these rights in the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, for some of your listeners who are interested. He has those rights, and you know something? We respect the rights of every citizen, including him. We respect his rights. But he has a chance to waive his rights and sit down with us, and we're not going to execute summarily his rights as he executed ours. We're forgiving people. We're willing to sit down. If he's repentant, I happen to have two great families here. I've broken bread with them, with both families. I can tell you they're sweet-spirited, forgiving people. They're willing to listen, and there's still going to be accountability. The doctrines of forgiveness and consequences are not mutually exclusive. You can forgive someone, yet there's still going to be consequences. But where our attitude toward what ultimately happens to him will change. I'm sure both of these families would agree to show more mercy and more benevolence in exchange if they were convinced that this person belatedly did the right thing, came clean, was repentant.
Okay, here's my question, though. You know, if he is being set up to be Miami Beach's PD, Lee Harvey Oswald, it's not going to work, because all you've got to do is spend 30 minutes Googling around, and this is hardly a lone wolf. There seems to be a lot of excessive force being used in the not just in Miami Beach, but you know, throughout that entire area.
You're right. But he could either be part of the solution now or part of the problem. As I told the Shahada family when I was up at a memorial service. A month after Hussein's death, we had a memorial service in Virginia. And as I told them, look, if we don't make noise, if we just sit around and kick the can, like Martin Luther King said, you know, evil triumphs when good men do nothing. Okay? If we don't do something about this, then we're part of the problem. We're not part of the solution. Well, Tavs can be, and you're right, this is epidemic down here with excessive force, Simon. And police getting away with things and a lack of discipline and shootings that are not justifiable being called justified shootings, we have a chance now to do something about it. And we're not going away. They're hoping that by delaying and obfuscating and what they do is they'll just make our lives miserable over time and say their investigation is still ongoing, not 6 months from now, but 18 months from now, they're still investigating. And they're going to try to say that their investigation is ongoing and delay and hope that eventually we go away. That's not going to happen. They can be part of the solution, Tavs and his lawyer, or they can be part of the problem.
I get the distinct impression that Miami Beach PD have bitten off a little more than they can chew, because I don't think you're going away anytime soon.
No, I don't. I just think that it's, if I didn't get to meet these families, I got to be honest with you, I started off as I'm ashamed to admit that I think that I was a little bit of a bigot myself. You know, when I first heard the name Hussein Shahada, I used to make fun of Obama, you know, Osama or whatever his name, Obama, Barack Hussein Obama. I used to say that when I was against him in the election. I was a bigot, I think. And yet, when I met Samer, and I met his uncle Khalil, and his other uncle, and I met his family, I started to see how they're just like my family. Especially the Italian side of my family. I'm half Italian, half Irish, but the Italians are very close. And what I saw in the Shahada family and how they all got together and rallied, and I broke bread with them in their house. And I said, wow, they're humanized. They began, and it shouldn't take this. I confess, it shouldn't take this. And the McCoy family was equally as sweet. And I said, you know, once I get to where I'm up close and personal with these people and intimate on certain levels, forget it. You know, Katie by the doors, you know, there's no turning back. You know, you gotta press on until there's justice.
Indeed. Denny, you got anything you want to jump in on?
Sure do. When Mr. Contini, at the beginning of the show, or when he first came on, we were talking about the CNN piece, and he mentioned a lack of investigative journalism. And that, I do some other cases regarding alleged botched police investigations and so forth. And I have noticed that there seems to be a lack of investigative journalism. And it's now here with the allegations, and I realize that these are allegations at this point, but if I fancied myself as an investigative journalist, I think I wouldn't be able to wait to get my nose into a case like this or cases like these and try to get to the bottom of it. What really happened? Why was this guy back on the street in 72 hours and so forth? And unfortunately, in order to get the word out, you have to interest an outlet. You have to interest the media in the story to get to make the noise, to get the word out, to maybe put pressure on someone or some agency or some entity. And I don't know where the investigative journalists are. And this isn't the only case. I see this all the time. And it's almost like trying to, if you get a new book out, trying to promote it. You got to try to promote your story to a media outlet to see if they will cover it. And I don't know why there's not people out there that want to call themselves investigative journalists who aren't pouncing on these cases and doing what they should be doing as investigative journalists. And Simon, maybe you can explain it to me, but I'm quite frankly befuddled at the lack of media involvement in a lot of these cases.
Well, I'll give you a good reason why being an investigative journalist is a bit overrated. My phone was ringing just after 6 a.m. this morning. I'm serious. I fielded calls from TJ and then Cobra, you know, one after the other. They both were whining at me.
Oh, boy.
Well, yeah, so I think that's why people don't want to do it.
Well, you know something, investigative reporting. I put quotes around the word investigative and reporting, and I sent it out to all the media last night. After this latest release by Miami Beach Police Department, their press release about how Taz was relieved of duty. I took that. I sent it everywhere. And I said to all these media people, because now I'm wanting to provoke them, frankly, to get involved. I said, investigative reporters, when are they going to start to, quote, investigate or, quote, report this latest, the third trouble that this officer is in? When? And I've gotten some response. But I had to provoke them. I had to stick my finger in their eye.
You you do. I tried to provoke CNN weeks and weeks and weeks ago about Adam Tavis, and I probably have not bad connections, but I didn't get anywhere.
And I want to say this, and are you still there, Lawrence?
I'm still here.
I think it's. I know you don't like to play the race card, because you're just a gentleman, and you just don't like to do that. And you're so civil all the time. You work for this. I mean, he works for the government. You're a 20-year Gulf War veteran. You're just a man of honor in many respects. You don't want to do that. Sammer didn't want to do that. Sammer went out of his way to say he didn't want to play the anti-Arabic card. Neither one of you want to do that. But I'll tell you right now, if this was some waspy gentleman, your 29-year-old son, Lawrence, or your 29-year-old brother, Sammer, if this was some Englishman or some Irishman or some European, this would be all over the networks.
Yeah, what, white, Caucasian,
European, whatever. This would be all over the networks. And I'm sorry to say that there has got to be some racism involved here. Lawrence, your son said a few days before he was murdered, he wrote an email to his mother, and in that email he talked about how the Miami Beach Police Department was treating American blacks like the old Negroes. And he was very articulate in how he wrote that email from the library in Miami. I loved the email, but he was prophetic in what he wrote. And in my opinion, if your son, and that's why this Sharpton and that's why Rainbow Coalition and these groups are going to get involved probably, because it might be, it just might be. If you look at the dispatch calls, go back, Simon, to the dispatch calls, even in the Shahada killing. They were told they were Hispanic. What else was it, Sammer? Clearly, AK-47s, Hispanic gentlemen. Even the dispatch rhetoric was false, but it was all bigoted.
And
why'd they ask Sammer? They asked the girls whether his brother, whether these two men, Shahadas, were speaking Arabic. This was after they killed Hussein. They're asking these girls in separate rooms whether these men were speaking Arabic. Like, what the hell difference does that make?
You know, I'm not one that likes to play the race card, but in this instance, I think it should be played. Yeah, and
guys were from Denmark tourists from Holland, or you can pick a country, another country, but that didn't have an Arabic name or a black face. I got a feeling things would be a little different with the media being all over this thing right now. And so it's up to us, frankly, to get the media involved and to get the Justice Department.
I think the thing that shocked me most about the dispatch calls and some of the reporting was that supposedly Hussein had an AK-47 secreted up his T-shirt. Now, I mean, yeah, okay, I'm not a forensic scientist or anything, but you know, I've looked at that CCTV video, and I for one just can't imagine anyone trying to hide an AK-47 up their white T-shirt. I mean, it makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. But I apologize if I've monopolized too much of this dialogue. I mean, Sammer and Lawrence are on the line, and they've got a lot if they may want to say about their loved ones and their life. The life of Hussein is beautiful, and the life of Lawrence Jr. was beautiful. Maybe they want to say something, and I'll be more deferential to both of them.
Good Lord. John Contini's going to be quiet. This isn't the John that we know and love. Actually, well, let's go to Lawrence. What would you like to tell us?
So Mr. Contini said, it's ridiculous the way the police conducted their so-called investigation. And I don't believe there really is much of an investigation going on. We know that there was no AK-47 involved, and it was obvious when the police confronted him that there was no gun there present. And for him to be shot on the spot or actually executed, it was uncalled for, unnecessary, and just plain brutal. It was an act of a savage individual who was determined to just kill someone that night. In the case of my son, the way he was murdered and executed, it's beyond imagination the way I think about it. It haunts me at night just to think about his image when I what I've seen from the autopsy reports, and it just I'm just still with grief, and I don't really know what else to say. But thank you very much, Mr. Barrett.
Lawrence, you said something about the military. Lawrence, you were in the military, right?
Yes, I was.
You said something to me once that was kind of telling about how in the military, when you're discharge your weapon and stuff, there were some protocols that were just that they teach you in the military. You would how when you shoot. Is there anything you can sort of juxtapose military training with police protocols or training?
And out in the Air Force, and what's called the security forces. Now back then it was called security police. So I was a police officer at the time. As a matter of fact, I was a police armorer. Once you go through your training, you're up and through terrorism school, anti-terrorism school, and ballistics weapons training and everything. And I rose to the position of an armorer, where I made sure the weapons were ready to be fired and issued, and I trained people how to use weapons. One thing that all police know, that if they're going to discharge a weapon, they go for the center of mass. They try to, if they're going to shoot someone, they're going to try to shoot at the biggest part of the body in order to take them down. In my son's situation, he was shot in the head, the face, neck, the arm, armpit, shoulders, everything. He was stood over and just executed. It was just brutal the way it happened. It's like it was gangland slaying. That was not taught by any police officers. That was done by someone who was enraged and just ready to shoot somebody. And I attribute that because he had just come off a 4-day shooting, and he was given a lot of accolades by his comrades that he took down a villain, and that he was on a high, thinking he can probably get another promotion out of this. He's thinking that he's ready to go and be able to take out another bad guy as quickly as possible. So he was looking to kill someone that night. He was ready to kill. He was encouraged to kill. He was a accident ready to happen. He was lethal that night.
Mm-hmm.
When he ran into the situation, he wasn't in his mind, I believe, he was not about to not walk away without having another shooting on his hand. Someone else that he could have taken down and get more accolades so that he can raise rank faster and quicker. That's what I believe happened that night to him. And I wish that he would come forward and just state what happened that night. But as we know, that they did not even require him to give a statement, a written statement, because they said it would violate his Miranda rights by giving a written statement.
Wow.
I wish the internal affairs would release whatever information they have, if they have anything. But I was told by the police that they were not required, that he was not required, or none of the officers were required to give any statement. To this day, there is no statement as to what they did, when they did it, how they did it, or why.
John, I'm not trying to play CSI, you know, the TV series, but these exit and entrance and exit wounds.
Yes, we had a 27-year prosecutor in homicide just resigned the day before. Thank God we grabbed him and we got him in to look at McCoy's body. If it wasn't for David Rank, who we got him the next day after he resigned after 27 years. Homicide prosecutor. He put the gloves on. He put the mask on at the ME's office, the coroner's office, and he looked at the body and inspected it. And that's how we know what we know. We got the pictures taken. Thank God we got that done before the son was cremated. And otherwise, we never would have known.
Right. Is it possible to speculate about, you know, which shot came
first?
Very
good. Very good. You watch a lot of that CSI. I give you an A for just your question. But Lawrence, your son Brandon's going to be a lawyer, right?
Yes, he is.
Well, is he on the line too, or listening, or
no? No, Brandon actually, he didn't elaborate studying for a final.
You ask him when he finishes his final and he gets an A, ask him to study about what Mr. Simon Barrett is now bringing up, and that is trajectory of the, we can tell from, not yet, but we will, because again, they're not releasing the evidence yet, but we'll be able to determine the distance that those firearms were from Mr. McCoy, young Mr. McCoy's body, whether they were up close when they were discharged, up against his body where you would have things like, gun residue, and you could tell how far away the firearms were. You can tell by the actual path of the projectiles through the body, the trajectory, the angle, whether he was laying down.
Now we're talking.
Right, whether he was asleep, homeless that for 3 days that we know of, because he was trying to come home, you see. We know from his emails that that's what he was trying to do. And we know he may have been sleeping down there on Terminal Island when he was mistaken for the bad guy that might have carjacked the cab, who might have been running, who might have got away. Okay, and we could tell whether he was laying down, whether when he was executed summarily by these three dirtbags. We'll be able to tell those things. And so they'd be smart to come to me before making me and make these families. Eventually, we're going to get to the truth. Like he says, the truth will set you free in John 8:31-32, where he says, the truth will set us free. Free from what? Free from uncertainty, free from confusion, free from we're going to get to the truth. We're going to get to the, and if they were smart, they'd come to me and they would just want to minimize their pain.
Right. I actually believe that there is a lot to be learned from the physical evidence. How many shots did he take if he was standing up, how many if he was laying down, and you're right, the distance, the trajectories, very, very salient information, and might just put a very big dent in what Miami Beach PD is telling us, a very big dent. We're just about out of time. Sammer, what would you like to tell us as your parting thoughts?
Other than, my brother was a great person and, one of my best friends. But that's one thing, I didn't want to interrupt while everybody's talking, but with the investigative reporting thing, my brother initially got killed. It was reported guns were all over the place, and there was no... I think what they do is just they go ask the police department what happened, and they report that. Same thing with the McCoy case. I'm not going to lie, and I apologize, Mr. McCoy, but when I initially heard, I just got done burying my brother, and I heard about the McCoy thing, but what was reported was there was a big shootout, and he pulled out a gun and started shooting at them, and I was like, well, I guess that's a little bit more understandable, but I didn't really hear the full story until later. So there's no sort of investigative reporting. It's like they just go and ask the police what happened. And report that, and it's kind of despicable, you kind of get to wondering how many cases are like that. If we didn't have Mr. Contini, people would have still had the impression that my brother might have had a gun, or Mr. McCoy's son, Lawrence McCoy, was out there shooting at the police. It would have never been reported that there was never guns found or anything like that. And then another thing with the race car thing is, when they asked, again, I don't want to play the race card, but I don't think that if it was a Chinese person or a Russian person, that they would have walked around Miami Beach asking, did he speak Chinese or did he speak Russian? I don't think that would have happened, but,
you're right.
Arabic. And that's a crime. You can't speak Arabic. First off, I don't even think I have an accent. Me and my brother don't speak Arabic to each other, for one. But even if we did speak Arabic to one another, who cares?
Right.
Speak with that.
I speak English. And you guys have a really strange accent, but, I don't hold it against you.
Exactly. Then, maybe if
dispatcher got a call saying two white gentlemen had a gun. Maybe she wouldn't have reported it as fact, but since it was reported that it was either Hispanic or Arab or something like that, then maybe all of the, if they're Arab or they're Hispanic, they definitely have a gun on them. Maybe if it was reported that it was white people that didn't have a gun, but had a gun on them, maybe it wouldn't have been reported as fact. And
right.
That's another thing that's kind of disturbing, that she took that call that there's a bulge under the shirt, and she took it as fact that it's a gun under the shirt. Never a gun saw or anything like that. No, she just took it as fact, and that's disturbing in and of itself.
I agree. Denny, any parting thoughts for us?
Yeah, so basically a comment. I certainly hope, and I'm optimistic now after listening to Mr. Contini, that this isn't going to go away and that it's resolved, gotten to the bottom of, and the truth comes out as to what actually happened. And if there needs to be some changes in policy and procedure at Miami Beach or whatever, then hopefully a lot of positives will end up coming out of this before it's over.
Yeah, let's hope so. And John, to you, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I just want to thank you, Simon, for providing this forum. And if you could take this tape, for instance, and I don't know how you do what you do, but if there's a way of taking Denny's comments and Sammer's and Lawrence Sr. Mac's comments and somehow getting this out in cyberspace like you know how to do, to where it can be reverberating through cyberspace to everybody's email address where they can click on a link or somehow, and if it costs money, I don't mind. I want to pay for whatever it costs to get this, and there's going to be an expense to, let's say you have to buy lists of every media person in these lists. There's a list for everything. And let's say it costs $7,500, who knows, to get it out to hundreds of thousands of people. I'll pay that. I want to get this out. We must get this to where people are going to click on the link and listen to it. And whatever, we need to do it, because if we don't do it, it's going to die on the vine. And
well,
we can't have that. Can't have that.
You can rest assured that I will be forwarding the recording, and incidentally the recording will be available on www.bloggernews.net in a couple of hours, but I'll also be contacting my media friends and acquaintances, and hopefully we can get this case to move forward. I hate injustice. And I'll do anything to fix injustice. So,
if you want to get me some new business, Simon, if you want to have people call, 954-766-8810 on this case to give me what they saw on the street. We need new witnesses. They can call 954-766-8810. My law office, and I'll repeat it one more time, 954-766-8810, and tell me what you saw. Or if it's a new case and you want to give me money, that's great. I'll use that money and I'm going to buy more airtime for this case. See, we need money so that we can – we are up against the government. I want to say this. I'm not being really funny. We do need money. We need people to go to justiceforshahada.com and justiceformccoy.com, and we need them to donate $5, anything. That's how Obama got in. Short money from people, a little bit here, a little bit there. Why? Why do we need this money? For the lawyers? No, not for me. It's for the experts that we're going to need in police procedures, because we're against a government that can outspend us, you see. We're against a government that can usually win by attrition and by the money they can throw on limited resources at it. But if they think they're going to muscle us that way financially, they're sadly mistaken, because I'm not going to go away. And if it means raising $5 from 500 people or 1,000 people, and people go to www.justiceforshahada.com and justiceformccoy.com. They got a PayPal. They can put $5 in there. We're gonna be able to get the experts we need in firearms and ballistics and all these men and women that have all the initials next to their name that have credibility in court to be able to be up against a government that can outspend you. So, yes, call me at 954-766-8810 or go to those sites. Call Simon Barrett, who's like a real friend at this point, who's someone we all respect tremendously. So call Simon Barrett.
If anyone does have any information and wants to come forward, if you go to www.bloggernews.net and scroll down, you'll see a large black box that says Writers Wanted. If you click on that, you can send an email directly to me, and I will make sure that it gets forwarded to John's team. I want to really thank everyone that participated this afternoon. Denny, I always enjoy having you on the program. You have a sharp mind, and I'm sure this has given you a great deal of food for thought.
Certainly has.
Hey, I owe you, Denny. If you can reach out to your friends, Denny, I'll meet you in New York or Vegas. I don't care how crooked their noses are. I've represented more wise guys in my past, but a lot of they can cut through the BS. They know truth. They know truth from lies, and some of them have girlfriends in the media too.
That's right. I'll spread the word.
Thank you.
Okay. And Lawrence McCoy, thank you for taking time to talk with us today. I really wish that I hadn't talked to you, because I really wish none of this had happened. But it has happened, so you can rest assured I will be doing my best to do what I can to get some justice.
Thank you, Simon, for all that you've done and continue to do on our behalf, and I really appreciate it. On behalf of my family, we thank you.
And, Sama, same with you. You know, thank you for taking time. I really wish that I had never met you, because it should never have happened.
I appreciate everything you've been doing, though, Simon. I mean, it's really, really been, it's people like you that made this just a little bit easier, who have been trying to, really get the story out, and I really appreciate all your work.
And we're going to continue on with it. And, John, always a pleasure talking with you. We will probably do a show in the not-too-distant future, and let's hope we have some better news.
Thank you. I can't thank you enough, Simon, and to the entire McCoy and Shahada families. I love you guys, and we will press ahead, press on.
This is Simon Barrett for bloggernews.net, wishing everyone a happy Saturday afternoon, and I do hope you'll join us again tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern. And we will be bringing you the very latest in the Haley Cummings saga. Things are definitely heating up, as I found out at 6 o'clock in the morning this morning. So this is Simon Barrett saying thank you and have a wonderful day. Goodbye.